Welcome to Plugged In. I'm Greta Van Susteren, and we are live on Facebook at Voice America, and we want your comments and questions. This week, well, we dive into the contentious issue of international trade and tariffs. Specifically, tariffs on steel, aluminum, which is the backbone of the wrapping for so much of what is manufactured and constructed in the world. Last week, President Donald Trump ordered a 25% tariff on steel imports and a 10% on aluminum imports. U.S. steelworkers applauded the move. The president of a steelworkers union local in Ohio said, "It's good for America and hope it means more steel mills will be built and more jobs created." U.S. Steel, one of the country's largest steel producers, said it would fire up a dormant blast furnace to ramp up production. However, the Trade Association for U.S. Aluminum Makers says the tariff may do more harm than good, doing little to address massive overcapacity in China. The tariffs are also upending American politics. Republicans who generally support free trade oppose the tariffs imposed by President Trump, while pro-union Democrats are voicing their support. In a few minutes, you're going to hear from Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross defending the president's tariffs. But first, VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson gives us the reaction from Capitol Hill.
When we're behind on an assurance from the White House,
trade wars aren't so bad.
After Capitol Hill warned the president that tariffs could stifle the American economy. Trump's proposed tariffs, 25% on steel and 10% on aluminum, drew criticism from congressional Republicans urging him to moderate the plan or risk U.S. economic growth.
There is a lot of concern among Republican senators that this could sort of metastasize into a larger trade war. And many of our members are discussing with the administration just how broad, how sweeping this might be. And there's a high level of concern about interfering with what appears to be an economy that's taking off.
The criticism is an unusual break for Republicans who have been reluctant to criticize the president through often divisive debates over health care and immigration. And it's clear those concerns were shared across the aisle.
But it seems initially it's not well targeted. It seems to have a greater negative effect on Canada and Europe than on China. So they ought to make sure what they do is focused on China. They are our number one trade problem, not Canada, not Europe.
But Europe was included in the president's claim that the U.S. has been taken advantage of for decades.
The European Union has been particularly tough on the United States. They make it almost impossible for us to do business with them, and yet they send their cars and everything else back into the United States. And they can do whatever they'd like, but if they do that, then we put a big tax of 25% on their cars, and believe me, they won't be doing it very long.
The hope now for Republicans? The Capitol Hill can work with the president to moderate his sweeping changes.
There is a problem that needs to be addressed here. We just want to make sure that it's done in a prudent way that's more surgical so we can limit unintended consequences.
And while the U.S. Congress could push back on those tariffs with legislative action, it's likely Republicans will work with the president in a more familiar way first.
Haven't seen Republicans on the Hill express a lot of eagerness to use their legislative tools in this way. I think they are much more comfortable just trying to persuade Trump and use this language.
The new tariffs, originally set to go into effect this week, are still under legal review. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Capitol Hill.
Wilbur Ross was an investment banker before being tapped by President Trump to be his Commerce Secretary. Ross is best known for turning around and restructuring bankrupt companies. I spoke to Ross on Tuesday about the new tariffs on steel and aluminum. Mr. Secretary, nice to see you, sir.
Good to see you, Greta.
All right, so the president has imposed this tariff on steel and aluminum, 25% on steel, 10% on aluminum. Why?
Well, for several reasons. Both industries have been decimated by highly subsidized, unfair foreign competition, resulting in part from grotesque overcapacity in the world, led by China.
Is there, in order to do this, though, you have to have some sort of authority. Obviously, the Constitution gives the authority to Congress, except for there's a statute that allows the president to do some in case of national security, or we could go to the WTO. right? Those are our options?
Right. And over the years, we've brought a lot of cases on steel. We've actually got over 100 cases, in effect, putting tariffs for anti-dumping or countervailing duties on different countries. 104 issues, 34 countries. So it's a fairly endemic problem. The largest single offender in it has historically been China. What the Chinese have done more recently, since these measures have to be by the WTO rules very precise as to product, even to the extent of saying it's under 0.2 millimeter in one case, and very precise as to country. That makes them relatively easy to evade because you can change its dimension a little bit, refine it to a little further state of manufacture, or transship it through another country, either with or without further processing. So the problem with the tariffs is while they have constricted behavior, they haven't really solved the overall problem because it starts popping up through other countries.
All right, well, so is the reason economic or is it national security? Because as I understand it, is that the president didn't go through the WTO possibly because of the fact you can evade it that way and so easily and it's more right. cumbersome, but that he actually did it through a statute that gives him the authority in terms of national security. So economic or national security?
Well, the way it's defined in Section 232, which is the technical provision that applies here, the way it's defined in 232 is relatively broadly. It specifically includes factors like effect on employment, includes factors like the continued health of a critical industry, includes a lot of things that a layperson wouldn't normally think was national security. But you've heard some of our national security advisors and our Department of Defense say over and over, economic security is national security.
We get a lot of steel from Canada, Mexico, Brazil, South Korea, but only get about 4% of our steel from China. So how do you reconcile that as being a national security, even from an economic standpoint, with such a what appears to be a minimal amount of steel from China?
Well, that's what I was just describing. China is the source of the principal overcapacity in the world. There are something like 400 million tons overcapacity, half of which are in China. China, even though its economy is quite a bit smaller than ours, now produces more steel in a month than we do in a year. Think about the disproportionality of that. They export over 100 million tons a year. And that's, even after that, they have the big overcapacity. So their exports are about equal to our total consumption in the United States. So it's way out of proportion. But for the reasons I mentioned to you before, the transshipment, the transfiguration to a slightly different state of manufacturing, all those factors are what lets it look like there's less of a problem with China than before. But ask anyone in the steel industry in the U.S. or for that matter in Europe, and they'll tell you where the real problem, the big problem, comes from.
Why do Canada and Mexico get an exemption from this tariff?
Well, there are several reasons for that, most important of which is if we did constrict the activities with them, they are also two of our most important export markets for steel. Between Canada and Mexico, they account for about 90% of our total steel exports. So if we just shut down the trade in both directions between those two countries and us, we would gain nothing. And we would disrupt a lot of very important activities, not the least of which is the continental security.
I've interviewed President Trump many times when he, before he was a candidate, before he was president, when he was just a businessman, and he always used to say that China was ripping off the United States. I mean, he said in every single interview, even when I didn't ask that question, he would inject it in. How did we get to the point where there was this, even the disparity, for instance, the tariff on American cars in right. China? How did we get to this point?
Well, the way we got here is very curious, and it almost ties with some of the history of Voice of America, in that right after World War II, there was a policy decision made that U.S., which at that point had very substantial trade surpluses, and in fact, we had surpluses until the mid-1970s. In any event, right after World War II, the decision was made as a policy matter, we have to help rehabilitate Europe and Asia from the ravages of war. So we deliberately reduced our trade barriers to those countries, deliberately sent the Marshall Plan and other forms of aid to them. And that was probably very good public policy at the time. Where they went wrong was not time denominating it or put some other denominator on it. So think about it. Concessions that were totally appropriate to make, say, to Germany in the early 1950s are no longer appropriate. Germany is now a super powerhouse of exporting countries, big trade surpluses, very strong country. So we didn't adjust our policy with the time. So we now end up with this bizarre circumstance that an automobile coming into the United States only carries a 2.5% tariff. A car from the U.S. or most other countries going to Europe, 10% tariff, four times as much. And then on top of that, you have VAT, which slightly multiplies the effect of the tariff. To China, because when China was admitted to WTO, they were a struggling, relatively small economy. They are charging 25% tariff on automobiles, and they are now the world's largest market for autos. Now, why is that important? It's important because our trade deficit has fundamentally two sources. One is geographic, and that's China, and the other is a product, and that's automobiles. So we have to solve the China problem and the automobile problem if we're going to make a meaningful reduction in our total deficits.
In light of the fact that we get such a small percentage of our steel from China, and I know that the exception, the way that the president has imposed is under national security, it is thought by many that this is really sort of an effort to punish China for technology theft, as well as forced transfer of technology. When American companies are over there doing partnering up in China, that they're forced to disclose technology, which then creates a sort of a long vision when we get far, when our economy transforms more into artificial intelligence and robots, that they're somehow going to have the wind behind them.
Well, there is a separate intellectual property right investigation which is being conducted by Ambassador Lighthizer, the U.S. Trade Representative. That investigation is the one that's intended to deal with intellectual property rights, with technology transfers, with forced partnerships, with cybersecurity breaches, things of that sort. So that's not the purpose of the 232. The 232 is determined to try to help two major industries that have been decimated, cut in half or more, by the ravages of dumped imports. We've lost a vast majority of our aluminum industry. We produce here a tiny fraction of our consumption. And with steel, it's also been an enormous loss of jobs, an enormous amount of mills closing. And here's where it also ties very directly to national security. The armor plate that's used on the Humvee vehicles and on Navy vessels is only made by one domestic producer. If that producer goes out of business, we would have to rely on foreigners to supply us with that armor.
It's sort of interesting to see who is in favor and who's not. For instance, Senator Brown, a Democrat, from Ohio, which is a steel state. He's very much in favor of this. I assume that's for jobs in Ohio. Are there is there going to be job loss with this? And I realize there'll be jobs as they fire up the steel business here in the United States. Is there any job loss associated with this?
Well, let's talk about that. What would create the potential job losses would be the impact on the pricing of other products that consume steel and consume aluminum. Well, let's go through some of the industries. Can of Budweiser, it's a fraction of 1 cent per can. A can of Budweiser sells for a lot, where a half a cent or a quarter of a cent isn't a big impact. Same thing with a can of Campbell's soup, same thing with a can of Coca-Cola or Pepsi. Cars, it's roughly something under 1% of the cost of a car. So if you carried it to its extreme, and if the full 25% applied to all steel, then, and if that were all passed on to the price of a car, it would be $4 a month on an average car. So it's an amount, but it's not something that's going to cause mass unemployment in the automotive industry.
If this is mostly directed at China, because we've given exemptions to some nations, right. Why are European nations opposed to this? I mean, there have been threats of, you know, we've had like back in 2003, I think when President Bush had a short-term tariff, they threatened the orange industry in Florida. But why is Europe, why do they have a dog in this fight?
Oh, I think there's the dog. They too are being dumped on by China and other places. And they're afraid if we build an effective wall against China, they'll be subjected to more dumping. So that's a very big reason why they're taking the attitude they are. The other reason is they're afraid we will take other trade measures that might affect them more directly. Europe has been spoiled, as we discussed earlier, over the years by having a much higher tariff wall and much tougher non-tariff anti-trade measures than we have. They're afraid this is the start of a whole movement. But let's take the things that they have threatened to do, the bourbon and...
Bourbon, that was for Senator McConnell, I think, right. For Kentucky.
Right.
You know, they've seemed to target different products that fit different states in the U.S.
Right. But first of all, to do that, they have to go through the WTO unless they're going to violate the rules. And WTO has to rule against us. Otherwise, it would be illegal under WTO rules for them to bring any of those measures. So let's leave that aside. What does it amount to? They're talking about $3.5 billion of product. $3.5 billion is 0.2% of our GDP. So for our economy overall, it doesn't mean anything. And plus, those products won't go to zero. Even if they put a tariff on bourbon, I'll bet you your average bourbon drinker would pay up a little bit in order to get the bourbon, because that's not a product that you can find elsewhere in the world very conveniently. So it's a very small thing. I'm sure it would be troublesome to individual industries, but it's even smaller than the impact on the economy of the tariffs directly. Steel, for example, and aluminum combined, if you assume the whole 25% and the whole 10% got passed on, it equals $9 billion, under 0.5% of our economy. So it's not a life or death thing.
So are these tariffs a big deal or not? Joining me, Congressman Mike Bost, Republican from the state of Illinois. He is the co-chairman of the Congressional Steel Caucus. His district includes more than a half a dozen steel companies. And Jacob von Kirkegaard, a senior fellow with the Peterson Institute for International Economics. He says it's fair to consider him a globalist and believes tariffs are not helpful. Thank you both for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Congressman, first to you, how do you predict or anticipate that China's going to respond to this?
Well, our hope is that China will have their, well, our hope is that China sees what they're doing, starts reducing the amount of production that they're having. They have flooded the market, even though they said it's only 4%. Let's look at what they're really doing. They're producing over half the steel, and they're spreading it throughout the nation, and then the nations, and those nations are then pushing into our market.
Sort of like money laundering.
Pretty well.
Right, now, you say that's what you hope they're going to do. What do you expect they're going to do? Have you heard anything?
We have not yet. We're early in the process. You know, what we know right now is we have companies turning up and starting mills that have been closed for 3 years in my district. That's vitally important. However, we also know that under 232, that we would have preferred, those of us that watched what came out in 232, a more programmed and narrower focus. But the president chose to make this broader focus. And now he's rolling that back, what we saw with Mexico, what we saw with Canada.
Exemptions.
And, yeah.
All right, Jacob, is this truly a national security issue, which gives the president the authority to do it under 232 that the congressman just said? Or is this a way to bypass the WTO because the president fears that the WTO is either too cumbersome or wouldn't support this?
I mean, I think clearly it's the latter. I mean, I think if you talk and you read the documents presented by the Pentagon and others, they will say that this is not a national security risk. And I think the magnitudes involved attest to that.
So the Commerce Secretary says it is national security.
Well, I think, again, if you look at the amounts of steel that we're talking about here, I think it defies belief that that's the case. And it's moreover the point here that everything else that the Commerce Secretary, in fact, says and the president says signals that this is about a safeguard for an industry that is under competitive pressure for a host of reasons from China. It's not, and that means that you cannot, under WTO law, use 232 to address this issue. At least if you do so, and I think Commerce Secretary Ross was very clear about that, you will face the risk of retaliation.
All right. Congressman, let me ask you about this national security. I mean, even if China gave us 30% of our steel, and I know the numbers have varied. I mean, I know the president disagrees with the numbers that people are saying it's less than 4%. But we have so many different places. There's South Korea. There's Brazil. There's our good friends in Canada, our good friends in Mexico.
Let me explain why it's national security. Okay. There's two particular reasons. One, the steel plant I'm talking about that's being turned up now, it produces the steel that is the tubing steel that is used for oil production. Right now, every bit of oil production we're doing, both domestic and offshore, is coming from Korea.
And
we have none being produced in the United States.
It's not made in Brazil or in Canada?
It's Korea, all of it, from Korea.
And nobody has an economic incentive to get into that business?
And none of them have, because Korea comes with such a low price because of mass production by using China steel to then make this rolled steel. Also, another issue is the wire that we use in transformers. We have one company left in the United States that makes this wire for the transformers. The only other country that makes it, China. Can you imagine if we're in a situation where something breaks out and we have to all of a sudden depend on China for our power grid? That's a national security issue.
Jacob, is there no other way to find the source of these materials someplace else or in some way or manufacture them ourselves or get them from other countries?
Well, I would argue that that is the case. But again, I would say that if you have a national security definition that covers transformers in the oil industry, well, then it's free game for everything. Then every country in the world can basically justify such concerns under 232-like legislation. And that runs the risk of making WHO a meaningless organization. And I think that's the real risk.
Do you agree that there's an unfair balance here between China and the United States in trade?
I mean, I agree that there's no doubt that China has been engaged in massive subsidization of its steel industry and many other sectors in China. There's rampant theft of IPR and these types of things. But I would certainly disagree that unilateral action taken by the Trump administration is the right way to get China to change its behavior.
All right. The Obama administration filed a case in the WTO a couple years ago about this deal. Nothing's ever happened. So do not see this as the president. Maybe he's using 232, and maybe it isn't national security, but he's using 232 because the WTO has been ineffective at helping this imbalance.
Well, I think the problem is that there is a multilateral track run through the OECD to try to reduce Chinese overcapacity. It is true that it has been slow. I will be the first to admit to that. But it is a multilateral approach to it, and I think it has the best chance of succeeding. I don't think this is going to make China change its behavior. In fact, it's going to make it much harder for the United States to get its allies in other fights with China on IPR, such as the EU and Japan, to help it rein in China's trade behavior on these issues, which I frankly think are much more important for the U.S. economy issues in the steel industry.
Well, we're bringing in this call plugged in. We bring in the viewers, and Alice Carter on Twitter said this: which is more helpful to the American people, being able to buy cheap stuff from other countries or being able to sell our stuff to them? Congressman?
Being able to sell our stuff to them. I mean, but the reality is, and when we're looking at this, when we talk about what we have before us, right now there are 31 cases pending that we're sending to the WTO. And every time we try to go after one item, they switch that item. I think
Let me just ask you the political question, though, because it's obviously this is a campaign promise to the president. You're Republican. I imagine you're a free trader under usual circumstances, but you got steel companies in your district, sure. So you've got to answer to that. You've got, you know, to what extent is this decision political and not necessarily an economic one or national security?
I think it is. It would be that we're going to support our districts. Don't get me wrong there. Sure. If you're not representing your district, you're not doing your job. But when you look at it, we're representing the nation. And the nation is in a situation where we've been fighting this battle with China a long time. We've tried a whole lot of moves. And finally, we've got an executive officer that's made a decision. It is 232, under the power given him, he has made a choice. Now, would I have chose option number two? I would have. I'm not the president. He chose option number one, which is a lot broader than I believe that we should do. But at least we're sending a message that this has got to stop.
Jacob, it seems like the fight is, you know, involving the EU and obviously Mexico, China, Canada, and the United States. Does this have any impact in other parts of the world that we're not talking about? For instance, the African continent. Is there any sort of effect on them?
I mean, I think in this particular sector, the impact is probably limited. But I think that the real issue here is that I do believe that the risk is that you may see the undermining of the global trading system, the WTO itself. You may open the door for every country to use national security as a justification to put tariffs on industries that, for whatever domestic political reason, want to protect. And that will certainly help hurt Africa and many others. And as I said earlier, I think it does significantly reduce the likelihood that we will get international cooperation to reining in China.
And of course, you see what an amazing chess game this is. You move one part, some other country is upset, or some other industry. It's incredibly complicated and incredibly important. Anyway, many thanks to our guest today, Congressman Mike Bost of Illinois, co-chairman of the Congressional Steel Caucus, and Jacob Funk Kierkegaard, senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. And thank you for being with us. That's all the time we have for today. Stay plugged in by liking us on Facebook at Voice of America. You can also like my Facebook page at facebook.com/Greta and follow me on Twitter @Greta. Thank you for staying plugged in.